The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on December 7 and written by Mike Householder, entitled, Michigan High School Choir Belts Out Holiday Tunes from a Towering Christmas Tree. Muskegon, Michigan. A Western Michigan community is celebrating the 40th anniversary of its beloved singing Christmas tree. The Mona Shores Singing Christmas Tree, which features a 180-student high school choir and stands 15 rows tall, belted out 19 holiday tunes at a Muskegon theater this week and was set to perform two more shows on December 7. The 67-foot-tall, or 20-meter-tall, tree is adorned with 25,000 LED lights and loads of greenery. The singing Christmas tree is 100% a spectacle, said Sean Lawton, who has directed the Mona Shores High School Choir and overseen the annual show for three decades. The towering tree-shaped structure has a hierarchy, with freshmen near the bottom, sophomores and juniors in the middle, and seniors above them. The very top, just underneath the star, typically is reserved for the tree angel, a student chosen by Lawton who is not your top singer, but has all the heart. This year's pick is senior Mackenzie Aney, who uses a wheelchair and performs at the base of the tree, close to the front of the stage. It makes me real happy and excited and joyful, Aney said, of being selected this year's tree angel. Aney and her fellow singers aren't alone as they run through Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Noel, and other holiday favorites. A 50-member Mona Shores High School Orchestra surrounds the tree, and a small army of parents and other volunteers make sure all goes smoothly, both on the ground and in the tree. The singing Christmas tree has been a holiday must-see for area residents for many years, but increasingly it draws fans from other states and even countries, with videos of past performances viewable online. It's become a bucket list item for a lot of people, said Lawton, who is marking his final holiday season in charge of the performance. The 58-year-old is retiring at the end of the school year. His successor is Brendan Close, a Mona Shores graduate who sang in the tree, as did his three brothers, and is co-directing the choir this year to help ease the transition. Now an AP article published on December 4, written by Deepa Barath, From Bach to Beyoncé, Why a Church Orchestra Aims to Lift Up Young Musicians of Color. Anaheim, California. For over 2 years, Ebony Vasquez searched to find a mentor of color for her son, Giovanni, now 11, and passionate about playing the violin. He has now found that space at a local church. New Hope Presbyterian Church, a multi-ethnic congregation led by a black family female pastor in Anaheim, started a string orchestra in April, welcoming students, including those who may have trouble getting into and paying for music programs. It's located in Orange County, which is largely affluent. The Reverend Shanetta Goodjoin said her church had a similar strings program for several years. When Goodjoin's daughter, Nyla, started playing violin with the Inner City Youth Orchestra of L.A., founded in June 2009 by renowned conductor Charles Dickerson, the pastor grew determined to replicate the concept in Orange County, with Dickerson taking the lead. The church's orchestra now has about 18 members, ranging in age from 9 to 20, playing violin, viola, bass, and cello. The orchestra accepts all students without audition and it's free. Like the Los Angeles group, the orchestra is also powered by mentors who look like the young musicians they help to guide. Ebony Vasquez says, "It is empowering for students to see themselves reflected in their mentors and teachers. It's important they don't feel like outsiders, but is supported and feel like they belong," she said. "It has definitely helped my son connect more to the music and the craft." During rehearsal, when Giovanni started talking about music, the boy's eyes turned dreamy and his arms became animated. Even as his words gushed out in childlike excitement, they reflected the aura of an old soul. "I just want to be able to express myself in my music and show that I not only have talent, but I also take my time and practice," he said. "You can change one little thing, one note, and the music will be totally different. You make your own thing." Giovanni said that in the church orchestra, he could play classical music or he could chill with Imagine Dragons. He also plays violin in his school orchestra and with Dickerson's LA group. He values being part of the church orchestra because it's a piece of our community. They encourage young musicians of color, and everyone gets a chance to play and maybe use it as a stepping stone to get better or even turn it into a career, he said. Giovanni thinks it could be cool to play in Carnegie Hall. He pauses, then adds, "But honestly, I just want to play around people who listen to and value music. My favorite part is really to see people enjoy music." Melissa Bosley, a cellist who works in finance and volunteers as a mentor, said she often found herself alone as a Black woman in this realm. "I never had a teacher that was African American growing up, and I didn't think it mattered or made a difference," she said. "But now, as an adult, I'd say there is absolutely value in being able to learn from someone who looks like you." Dickerson said he started the LA Orchestra when he was approached by a group of students who yearned to play in their city and neighborhood. They would have to drive long distances to be in these orchestras where they didn't know the other kids and felt like the odd ones, he said. "The young kids from our communities were always put in the back row, and the back row was right next to the door. It's easy to walk out that door," he added, "when you don't really feel accepted and when you know you're probably not as skilled as the others who have a smattering of connections and have been playing since they were three." Goodjoin said she and her husband, Reggie Goodjoin, a jazz musician and the church's music director, envision an orchestra where African American kids play classical music and play it well. "Not modified or watered down abridgments, but the real deal," she said. "I like to say they play everything from Bach to Beyoncé. We want them exposed to all genres." The children will play sacred and secular music as well as work of Black composers, and the orchestra is open to children of all faith backgrounds, Goodjoin said. "They learn the music of Count Basie and Duke Ellington and so many others who have forged the path, an experience they might not get in a mainstream school setting," she said. She believes the church is a great place to start talking about equity in music. "We value social justice and equity, and we believe we are called to help the marginalized, to set the captives free," Goodjoin said. "And music is freedom." The pastor is already getting positive feedback from parents. One boy who plays the upright bass was about to quit playing because no one in his school orchestra looked like him. His mom said that when he came here, the pressure to play and compete was taken off, and that it's a delight to now watch her son light up, feeling a sense of worthiness, she said. Carol Neely, whose nine-year-old son, Jonathan, plays the violin, said the church has the ability to nourish the community, be it with food, spirituality, or music. Because of this program, my kids are exposed to the violin. It's no longer something untouchable or foreign, she said. It will have an impact for generations because their children will see their parents pick up and play the violin. Elizabeth Malthrop, executive director of El Sistema USA, part of an international network of music education programs that originated in Venezuela, said she has seen similar programs run out of churches. Music and art have always been such an important part of the church, she said. It's a natural place for expression of faith. For those who aspire to advance in the field, such programs also offer access to life-changing summer music camps, college scholarships, and connections to jobs, Malthrop said. Dickerson says the orchestras are an attempt to add to the value of what we need in our community. The goal is to uplift young people and give them the opportunity for a better life. A lot of young people feel like it's not cool to carry a violin down the street, he added. But when you play the violin well with other kids who are like you, social acceptance begins to emerge. You feel pride as opposed to shame because you're not out there shooting hoops. The Black church has always served as a place where the community could come together, Dickerson said. It's the one place in history where we've been able to assemble without interference from other cultures, so to speak. The church started banks when Blacks could not put money in banks. They started newspapers when no one was prepared to cover our communities. We even started baseball leagues when we were barred from playing. If we can come together in the church and create a symphonic orchestra, all I can say is, all praise to God. Now an article published on December 6 by the Religion News Service, written by Claire Giangrave. New network Netflix film wants to make Mary accessible to all. Vatican City. Catholic Hollywood director D.J. Caruso set out to tell the story of Mary as seen through her own eyes in a new film available on Netflix beginning December 6. You may think you know my story, Mary tells viewers at the start of the film. Trust me, you don't. Caruso's film, entitled Mary, starring veteran actor Anthony Hopkins of Hannibal and Noah fame as King Herod, takes viewers from Mary's own birth to the delivery of her son Jesus to the Holy Temple of Jerusalem. Alongside familiar scenes from the Christmas story, the Annunciation, the manger birth, the visit of the wise men, the film offers a more harrowing look at the dangerous reality Mary and Joseph faced as Herod's forces pursued them to kill the infant Jesus. But amid the high stakes of the tale, Caruso wanted Mary and her husband Joseph, both played by relative newcomers, to come across as relatable to all viewers. The world needs to see Mary, and they need to see her in a new light, Caruso said in an interview with RNS on December 4. My goal was to see if I could present Mary in a beautiful way, in a way that a younger audience could see her and relate to her as not just this beautiful, iconic, holy mother, but as a young girl who had to make sacrifices and struggle and deal with things that a lot of the contemporary youth are dealing with today. Caruso visited Rome to have his movie blessed by none other than Pope Francis, after a mutual connection helped him get a front row seat at the Pontiff's weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square on December 4. The director presented the Pope with a yellow scarf featured in the movie. While the movie is made from a Catholic perspective due to Caruso's personal faith, the director said he hopes the film makes Mary accessible to all beliefs, to all Christians, to Muslims, to everybody, and even to those who don't have faith. Some controversy has surrounded the feature, as critics on social media have called for a boycott of the film for casting Israeli actors to play major roles, arguing they should have been Palestinian instead. Meanwhile, Catholic conservatives have voiced qualms on Facebook, complaining the movie does not reflect the ideas of Mary they were raised with and taught. Caruso understands that making a movie about such a pivotal religious figure can be controversial, but said he focused on what people agree upon in their devotion to Mary, not their disagreements. If you make the movie from love and adoration for, you know, the greatest woman that ever walked this planet, and that was my approach, then I feel like until people see the movie, they'll understand and appreciate what we're trying to do, he said. He selected Noah Cohen to play the central role of Mary. She had this grace, and she had this beauty, and she carried herself in such an amazing way. But what I thought was the most important aspect of her is that she's incredibly accessible, Caruso said, adding that her interpretation showed someone who can also be your best friend, someone you can hang out with, someone you can trust. Ito Taco interprets the role of Jesus, who is younger in the film than how he is described in Scripture. Caruso said he was inspired by the late Bishop David O'Connell, who was his spiritual leader, in telling the story of Joseph, who in the Gospel is never given a voice. He said, Joseph is a hero who defended his wife and defended his baby, and you need to let people know that, Caruso said, reporting a conversation with the bishop. O'Connell, who was the auxiliary bishop in Los Angeles, was shot to death in 2023. Cohen and Taco are still generally unknown to the public. Caruso said he wanted the characters to be played by actors with no cinematic baggage, to allow viewers to focus on the story instead of the stars on the screen. But that wasn't the case for Herod, interpreted by Hopkins, who delivers a brooding performance of the cruel and tyrannical ruler. At 86, the famed actor is reflecting on his spirituality and faith, Caruso said, and he offered a portrayal of Herod as an old man coming to terms with his mortality and God, despite his earthly power and achievements. It just made Herod that much more complicated than just being the bad guy, he said. Caruso said he attempted to make every frame a painting, with the use of light, texture, and lenses. If I'm going to make a movie about Mary, I'm going to make it the best movie I can possibly make as a gift to God, he said. Despite the low budget, the movie manages to deliver a rich and textured aesthetic. This is in large part thanks to costume director Tina Kalvas, who combined the draping usually associated with biblical stories with the billowing fabrics of ancient Japanese clothing. For Caruso, the world needs Mary now more than ever. During the scene of the Annunciation, when Mary tells the archangel Michael that she accepts God's will for her to bear Jesus, he said he was moved to tears while operating the camera. That is a perfect message for the young people, to surrender it all to God, he said. Our last article was published by the Associated Press on December 5 and written by Costas Contouris and Nicholas Paphaitis. Experts believe study of 700-year-old handwriting unveils leading Byzantine painters' true identity. Thessaloniki, Greece. Crime-solving techniques applied to a medieval illuminated manuscript in Paris may have solved a centuries-old puzzle, the true identity of a leading Byzantine painter who injected humanity into the rigid sanctity of Orthodox religious art. A contemporary of Giotto, considered the father of Western painting, the artist conventionally known as Manuel Pansalinos was equally influential in a totally different tradition that's largely overlooked in the West. But nothing is known of his life, and scholars now believe Panteleimon was just a nickname that eventually supplanted the real name of the man for whom it was coined, likely Ioannis Astropas, from the northern Greek city of Thessaloniki. The art of Byzantium that decorates churches across Greece, Serbia, and other Orthodox churches stands out for the stark formalism of its elongated, glowering saints, quasi-cubist mountains, and doe-eyed Madonnas. Work attributed to Panteleimon from the 13th and 14th centuries is considered the finest produced in an empire that straddled Europe and Asia and endured from the fall of Rome until the capture of the imperial capital Constantinople by the Ottoman Turks in 1453. Art historians had long suspected that the name, Greek for full moon, could have originated as a nickname for some member of the so-called Macedonian school of painting, which was based in Thessaloniki. Research by a Greek monk and linguistic scholar linked Panteleimon with Macedonian school painter Astropas. Now, court handwriting expert Christina Sotokoglu has matched lettering on a manuscript tentatively attributed to Astropas with characters of a church painting in northern Greece, long seen as Panteleimon's best work. Father Cosmas Simon Petressas, a former senior administrator in Mount Athos, the semi-autonomous monastic community where the Protata Church stands, says that she and his research clearly prove Panteleimon's real identity. Panteleimon was a real person, and the name was just the nickname by which Ioannis Astropas became known. Constantis Falfiadis, a professor of Byzantine art in Athens who was not involved in the studies, said he found merit in the nickname theory and Astropas link, even though it appeared more than one painter had undertaken the Protata project. I agree with attributing part of the paintings to Ioannis Astropas, he said, but again there remains much ground for future research into that person, because other Mount Athos monuments from the same period have not yet been efficiently or sufficiently published. Panteleimon, a role model for generations of painters, and his contemporaries, are associated with a renaissance of kinds in Orthodox art that revived forms and techniques inherited from antiquity. Facial expressions acquired a deeper humanity, and greater attention was paid to proportion and depth of feel. Father Cosmas said Astropas was an extremely gifted painter with vast knowledge who harmonically combined the ancient classical world with Orthodox Byzantine spirituality. And that makes his work unique worldwide, he added. Artist signatures were not common at the time, although some survive from members of the Astropas family. There are none from Panteleimon. The trail started with earlier research linking Astropas with the artist and scholar who wrote and illustrated Marcian Codex GR516, an early 14th century Greek handwritten text treating subjects from astronomy to music theory. Among the painted illustrations was a full moon. For me, that was the main proof, Father Cosmas said. With the name found for the hand that produced the manuscript, the next step was to check its style against writing on the Protata painting, traditionally linked with Panteleimon. Mrs. Sotokoglu, who is a writing expert, filled in that blank, Father Cosmas said. There was one problem. Women have for more than 1,000 years been banned from entering Mount Athos. I was forced to study the Protata paintings based on photographs, she said, who works as a court consultant on identifying or authenticating handwriting in criminal cases. The work was very difficult because the writing on the wall paintings is in capital letters. And the painters subdued their personal handwriting to conform with the traditional format, she said, rather like anonymous letter writers' attempts to disguise their true style. The Martian Codex is written in very small, lowercase letters. The first clue came from the Greek letter phi, the English F. It's a phi that stands out and is similar in both the manuscript and their Protada painting, she said. Matches also followed with other letters. T, with its proportions, which is bigger, covering the other letters, and is topped with a curve, the proportions of the K. But when the phi was revealed, the code of the writing was broken, and the job became much easier, she said. Father Cosmas said that during his administrative duties on Mount Athos, he attended services at the Protada Church on a daily basis. That's where my desire was born, to explore the mystery around the name and the identity of Pantelinas, he said, adding that he thinks the artist has now acquired his true identity. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you'll listen again next time and that you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.